All right, our next case is In Re Estate of McConnell. Yes, please help yourself. Again, this is In Re Estate of McConnell.
May it please the court, my name is Edward Hutz. John Slovacek and I represent the personal representative of the estate of Timothy McConnell, Terry Regendron. Timothy McConnell and Susan were married in February 1999, and prior to that, they entered into a prenuptial agreement, which is not contested in this litigation. Mr. McConnell was diagnosed with mesothelioma in 2010, was mostly asymptomatic until late 2012 or 2013, and he began to suffer. He filed for divorce in March of 2014, and prior to that divorce being concluded, he died of complications from mesothelioma after long suffering on September 14th, 2014. There was other litigation involving the estate, which is now over. The personal representative during this time period hired a specialty firm in St. Louis, the O'Brien Law Firm, to pursue an asbestos claim or mesothelioma claim because Mr. McConnell had been exposed to asbestos-containing materials his entire working life. That settlement, a settlement was reached of about $3.5 million, and after fees, there's about $2.3 million, which we're here to talk about. The allegations of the mesothelioma claim filed in Missouri contained all the damage elements involving Mr. McConnell's pre-death pain and suffering and pre-death damages. The county, the parties stipulated, and the court in Missouri entered an order that said, we approve the settlements, we approve the fees and costs, but we're gonna send the allocation of this back to the estate in Nebraska to be allocated pursuant to Nebraska law. And I would suggest to the court that the roadmap of the allocation pursuant to Nebraska law is the 2015 case of In Re Estate of Painick, decided by the Nebraska Supreme Court. When we had this trial on the allocation in the county court, Judge Hansen issued a 3 or 4 page order in which she found that there was no evidence in the record to support an allocation to the survival claim.
So Judge Hansen didn't find that there was no survival claim made in the Missouri court. She just said in your proceeding in county court there wasn't sufficient evidence to allocate money to the survival.
That's what she said, because there was no proof of funeral bills or medical expenses, things like that.
And did she make any mention of pre-death pain and suffering by the decedent?
Well, I read that yesterday. I don't think, not materially. There was a lot of evidence from other witnesses about Tim McConnell suffering through mostly all of 2013 and up to 2014 when he died. But she determined specifically that she didn't have sufficient evidence in front of her to allocate to a survival claim. She then allocated 90% of the proceeds to the pecuniary loss that she identified that Susan, the widow, soon to be divorced but widow, suffered, and 10% to the daughter. She also, in allocating that 90% of the proceeds to pecuniary loss, ignored the prenuptial agreement that Tim McConnell and Susan entered into, which is a contract matter. And in the divorce case, the district court was beginning to allocate some alimony payments, but said that, and I'm sorry, this isn't in the record, but there was $100,000 in alimony due. She'd gotten 20. Our position is she's due 80. And that's the extent of her pecuniary loss.
The problem here is, would you agree that because Mr. McConnell passed away before the divorce was finalized, we don't really know how that prenuptial agreement would have been treated in the final divorce decree, do we?
We don't know, but there was a challenge to the prenuptial agreement in the estate proceeding when there was a election against the will, and that objection was withdrawn at some point. So the effect of that is that the prenuptial agreement is a valid legal document. But I can't speculate about what the district court would do in the divorce case.
Is there
Is there any precedent in Nebraska dealing with the impact of a prenuptial agreement on wrongful death proceeds, given that those are outside the marital estate?
The Pena case, there was a, it was a second marriage, and there was a prenuptial agreement. But the effect of that prenuptial agreement was that the surviving spouse, the second surviving spouse, was precluded from taking in the estate. I don't know of any case that addresses the issue that you raised, which is, what effect does that prenuptial agreement have on this kind of an allocation? Mm-hmm. I will tell you that I think that the prenuptial agreement defines what pecuniary loss Susan McConnell suffered because of Tim McConnell's death. That prenuptial agreement certainly came into effect probably at the time of filing of the divorce, but certainly at Mr. McConnell's death. When he died, her rights were determined under that prenuptial agreement. And those rights should govern her pecuniary loss. And the Corona case says that the pecuniary loss is for losses from date of death forward, not what happened prior. And Judge Hansen, I think, got a little confused. She talked about Susan's prior history, her level of lifestyle and that kind of thing. And she also found, and it shouldn't be a factor, it was to her, but it shouldn't be to you, to this court, that because Terry Regendron was the primary beneficiary of this estate, that she doesn't need the money. And Judge Hansen specifically refers to that. I think that's wrong. Whether the beneficiary is a handful of charities or the daughter shouldn't make any difference to allocating Tim McConnell's damages for his pre-death suffering under the survival claim.
Can we talk a little bit more about the wrongful death claim and the impact of the prenup? Because I think it's a little more complicated than maybe at first glance, because you are not talking about the same circumstance here in terms of this source of money, right? It is, as you indicated, from death forward. It's what's the loss from death forward. So a prenup doesn't anticipate that kind of loss, does it? Unless it specifically says so in the prenup. And is there language in this prenup that you would suggest covers proceeds such as a wrongful death claim?
Because there was a divorce pending, and because the prenuptial agreement covered the event of a divorce, it is our position that that prenuptial agreement, providing for Mrs. McConnell in the event of a divorce, is the measure of her pecuniary loss from the date of Mr. McConnell's death during the divorce proceeding forward.
Does it matter that the divorce isn't final?
I don't think so.
They could reconcile?
They could have reconciled. Mrs. McConnell at the trial testified that she had resolved herself to the fact that that divorce was going to become finalized. She testified to that. Another factor here is that neither the defendant in the Missouri case or the plaintiff did any allocation at the time of the settlement. The defendants didn't impose an allocation of the survival claim versus the wrongful death claim, nor did the plaintiff do it.
And that happens, right?
Yeah, well, that happens. Yeah. They're all bundled together, and if most of the time the beneficiaries are about the same, so there's no issue. So in terms of the Judge Hansen's allocation of 90% to Susan McConnell, it seems to me that the person who suffered the most in this whole episode was Tim McConnell. The daughter is self-sufficient. She lost the companionship and society of her father's company, but she's fine.
Yeah, in the motion for new trial hearing, you had a good conversation with Judge Hansen about this, and I believe she actually conceded that he was the one who suffered the most, right?
She did.
But she had trouble trying to pinpoint what's the value to put on that. She didn't know, she didn't feel like she had the evidence to determine that amount.
And I said to her, that's what juries do every day in this courthouse. Mm-hmm. And I think that, and that gets to a point that raised in the Penny case. That is, if you're going to make a change here, do you do it or do you send it back to Judge Hansen to do it? In Painick, the Supreme Court sent it back to the county court. So I don't know what your thinking is on that, if you're going to make a change in this result, but if you do...
Well, the fact finder needs to make that decision.
So it'd have to go back to Judge Hanson. But you're right. We did have a good conversation about that. And she acknowledged also in that conversation that the fact that Terry was the beneficiary of that estate made no difference. I have 15 seconds left. I'll reserve it.
Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, I can't dispose of the appellant's position in 15 seconds, but I don't think I need 10 minutes. Your Honors, let's start with what the Missouri court said. In paragraph 1 of the Missouri court's order, Exhibit 9, the court said, the plaintiff, Teresa Regendron, is the duly appointed personal representative of the estate of the decedent, who in her fiduciary capacity sued seeking damages for wrongful death.
Well, but the petition did seek for pain and suffering and the other damages.
The petition had unclear allegations, but the judgment, the petition's not entitled to full faith and credit, Your Honor. The judgment of the Missouri court is entitled to full faith and credit, and it found that the action was a proceeding for wrongful death. It continued.
Is that a label, though, Mr. Donovan? Is that a label, or is that a substantive statement of what it is?
It's a substantive statement of what it is, Your Honor, because in Missouri, like Nebraska, there is a survival statute, there is a wrongful death statute. They are separate and distinct claims. The initiation of a wrongful death action in both Missouri and Nebraska does not carry with it the right to assert the survival claim, the claim for the injury to the decedent. That has to be brought separately. Now, they're often brought together, but if they are brought together, they are separate, distinct claims. They are submitted as separate claims, as this court knows from its years on the trial bench. There are verdicts for separate claims if they are to be kept separate through the trial, and the disposition of the money is separate, distinct, and different. In this case, the Missouri court said, not the Missouri litigants, this is a wrongful death case. We have a recovery. We are sending the recovery to Nebraska to be divided under Nebraska's wrongful death statutes.
Did it say that?
Yes, it does, Your Honor.
Specifically?
It specifically says in what I've read you in paragraph 1, it continues with a description of who the beneficiaries are under the wrongful death statutes in paragraph 3. It mentions wrongful death in paragraph 2, and it then describes in paragraph 9 that the court makes no finding as to distribution and the remaining funds are sent to Nebraska to be administered by the county court in the proceeding for the estate of the decedent.
Under Nebraska law.
It does say under Nebraska law, of course. And that's because Nebraska law requires, as the court's questions to the appellant anticipated, that there be a decision about the pecuniary loss sustained by each of the next of kin. Now, the second simple place where the appellant fails in this case, beyond the very character of the Missouri statute, the judgment in Missouri, is the fact that on this record, the appellant testified that she had, to quote her, zero, that was her word, zero pecuniary loss.
Financial. Didn't she say financial?
I think she used the word pecuniary, but she may have used the word financial.
Which is different.
Financial might be different, but it would only be different if there was some affirmative evidence of a loss of the value of a relationship or the loss of a valuable relationship. Mm-hmm. The record in this case is that this particular daughter was the sole daughter. She lost her father, and she talked about how much her father suffered and said she had no loss.
Can we talk about the impact of the prenup on
Your Honor.
Death claim? I recall that there's some language in the prenup that describes your client's ability to recover. It's pretty limited, and in fact, it has language in there that suggests that the terms of the agreement were such that she would be treated as though they were never married. I mean, there's something in there like that.
Yeah.
And that's pretty strong language, that if any benefit you might receive in the future is limited to the things identified in this agreement, and you are waiving your right as though you were never married to me, wouldn't that suggest that would include a wrongful death claim?
No, Your Honor, and here's why. First of all, a contract between parties can contract about those things that exist during lifetime, during the existence of the parties to the contract. In a typical case involving the disposition of assets or the anticipated disposition of them, in a prenuptial agreement, there are two concerns. What do you own and what do I own? That's number one. What do we own presently? Number two, what will we own at the time of the death of the first of us to die and what will we do with it? Now, a wrongful death case is not owned by the decedent. It's not owned by the spouse. It is not a present race. It is also not a race that can be anticipated during lifetime.
Well, it can only be owned by the spouse if she survives the...
It comes into existence upon death after the contracting party has expired.
But for your client, she would have to be viewed as the spouse, surviving spouse, right?
Well, and she clearly is. There's no question about that.
Unless the language in that prenup says any benefit that might otherwise accrue based on this marriage... You're waiving as though we were never married.
But, Your Honor, the antenuptial agreement cannot anticipate and dispose of those things that neither exist nor come into legal existence.
Well, it doesn't it? I mean, it anticipates future earnings that may never accrue. It anticipates a number of things that might not happen.
But it covers only those things that exist at death. It does not cover those things that exist after death.
Well, didn't his estate's right to sue after his death for his pain and suffering, didn't that accrue because of his death, at the time of his death?
Well, it accrues because of death, but after death. There is no wrongful death claim until after the moment of death. It doesn't arise upon the moment of death. The wrongful death claim arises when death is a fact. And that can't be contracted away in advance.
So your position is the prenup has no bearing whatsoever on the wrongful death claim?
None whatsoever. And there are many good policy reasons for that, but here's the best one. It's impossible for the parties to anticipate what their pecuniary loss will be after one of them dies. And the entire purpose of wrongful death is not to enrich. It is to compensate for pecuniary loss that cannot be known or anticipated because death can't be.
But can't we anticipate your client's pecuniary loss based on the terms of the prenuptial agreement?
No, Your Honor, because we don't know whether that spouse at the time of death is going to be 22 or 82. We don't know whether that spouse is going to be dying of cancer or healthy as a horse. We don't know if that spouse is going to be a quadriplegic or an Olympic athlete. None of those things can be known at the time of contracting.
But when you're contracting, you're waiving your right to make any claim, regardless of how a person dies. It just says, upon death, this is what you get.
I'm making, when a party enters into a prenuptial agreement, the party waives the rights that could be asserted as a result of the marriage, not as a result of a death.
Well, it's kind of both, right?
I mean, no, it isn't both. Only death gives rise to the death claim. It happens to be the death of a class of persons, a spouse, but that is distinct from marriage. Marriage is a solemnized relationship during lifetime. Death ends marriage.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I did do a look around the country just to see, and there is some division on this. And
well,
in terms of should a prenup apply to a wrongful death claim or should it not, and there's kind of a split viewpoint on it, but what seems to be the case is the focus is on the language of the prenup itself and whether there's language in the prenup that actually covers, it's broad enough to cover a wrongful death claim.
Your Honor, I'm modestly aware of the split, and I respectfully submit that if you carefully look at the opinions of the courts that have confused this issue, what they have utterly failed to discern is the difference between life and death. The difference between claims that arise during life and that claims that arise as a result of death. The former, in a prenuptial agreement, arise because of a life event. That event is a marriage. The wrongful death claim arises because the marriage has ended and have nothing to do with arising during the lifetime of the decedent. It's because the decedent is dead that the claim arises. The judgment below should be affirmed. There was an utter failure of proof in addition to all that we've discussed at the intellectual level, which is very interesting.
Can I take you quickly back to the survival claim, if I might? And your position is that wasn't allowed for in the Missouri order.
I don't think it was even sued for.
But that's not what the county court decided in this case, right? It didn't say there was no survival claim that came to us as a result of the Missouri judgment. Didn't Judge Hansen simply look at the merits and say, I don't have enough evidence in this proceeding to allocate money to the survival claim?
Judge Hansen's finding of fact number 5 says, Regendron filed suit in Missouri for damages for McConnell's mesothelioma due to asbestos disclosure. It continues at paragraph 7 that the claim was for wrongful death, and in paragraph 7, the term wrongful death appears 3 times. On page 2 in the discussion, the term wrongful death appears at least twice. It appears in the judge's order in an entire section headed wrongful death on pages 3 and 4.
But didn't the judge actually go through a process of considering what you've just described, that the petition or the court refers to wrongful death, but there's also discussion in the petition for pain and suffering, and this was, although it didn't indicate personal representative on the petition, it was clearly brought in her capacity as a personal representative. It's like Judge Hansen went through this process of thinking it through, and ultimately she concluded there was, but that there was not sufficient evidence to apportion any.
Well, the judge did carefully draw a distinction between the two claims. That's definitely true in the discussion paragraph on page 2 of her opinion. She clearly understood there was a difference between a survival claim and a death claim. She clearly found there was no evidence to support the death claim. She did not make an affirmative finding that there was no suit initiated in Missouri for that claim. I think a fair reading of the complaint and an absolutely dispositive reading of the Missouri order is that this is a wrongful death case. Once the Missouri court characterized it that way, the Nebraska court has no right to second guess that. That's a matter of full faith and credit. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. I know we took him over a minute, but we'll go ahead and allow an additional minute to your time, Mr. Hutz, if you would like it.
Thank you, Judge. I'll try not to use it. The court is correct that the complaint in the Missouri case clearly includes the survivor damages. And the order that Mr. Domino was talking about, where it said that the Missouri court sent it back to Nebraska to be allocated under Nebraska wrongful death statutes, that's not what it says. It says to be allocated in the estate proceeding pursuant to Nebraska law, which under the Paney case clearly includes allocation to the survival cause of action. And when you mentioned, Judge Bishop, the conversation we had in the motion to alter and amend, you know, Judge Hansen, as I recall it, said she agreed that Terry, the status of Terry as a beneficiary didn't matter who the beneficiary of the estate was. I also made the point, I believe, that with regard to the prenuptial agreement, that the prenuptial agreement governed. I probably focused on the prenuptial agreement governing the measure of pecuniary loss, not the issue that you raised, but with that, I would ask the court to remand to the county court with instructions to allocate, just like every jury is doing in assessing damages, a survival claim, and to properly allocate the whatever is remaining by pecuniary loss from the date of death forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. The matter is submitted.